Welcome to the supplementary podcast for your family communication textbook, Communication in Family Contexts, Applying Theories and Processes to Family Relationships. In this series of podcasts, your textbook authors interview family communication scholars, discussing their research and how it contributes to our overall understanding of family communication. The authors hope that hearing the voices and the stories of scholars you're reading about will bring the material to life and enhance your learning.
Today we're joined by Dr. Sandra Petronio, a professor in the Department of Communication Studies at the Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. She's worked in communication departments across the country and specializes in research on privacy, disclosure, and confidentiality in interpersonal health and family communication contexts. Currently, she's the executive director of the Communication Privacy Management Center at IUPUI. Her book on communication privacy and management theory set the course for researchers interested in how people construct, negotiate, and repair the boundaries around their private information. Her research has been recognized with a variety of awards, including book awards from the National Communication Association and the International Association for Relationship Research.
Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Petronio. We really appreciate you being here. We were hoping we could start actually with a brief introduction of yourself, a little bit about where you're from, what your interests are, and inside and outside of academia.
Okay. I was born in Brooklyn, New York. I went to high school. Actually, this is kind of a sad part of my life. And I had to be in remedial reading classes for all my high school. Because I am still severely dyslexic.
Wow.
And so it was difficult for me to get out of, I just barely got out of high school. And then I got married and had my daughter, which was great. But I decided that I needed to learn more about how to read because I didn't read properly. I would skip lines and then make up what I thought was really the crux of the issues, and a lot of times it wasn't. But I was able to get enough reading and understanding in that in undergraduate, or I was in a community college, that I learned how to move on from one line to the next, taking a ruler, and teaching myself how to read, because I realized I didn't have any reading comprehension, but I could read what the words were. So that was a good thing that happened, but it sounds really sad, and it was, because I couldn't really read well, and everybody was worried that I wouldn't even get out of high school. So I got married to my first husband, and that's where I decided I wanted to have a chance to go into an academic arena, so learn anything about family communication. And so my daughter was impetus for that. And after I got divorced, it's like skipping kind of decades, many decades, I had an internship in undergraduate. And worked with two people who are very famous sociologists, and I was research assistant for them at Stony Brook. I got to learn a lot about family issues and professional women in that case, because she was a cohort of Goffman, and it was interesting because there were very few women. This was in probably in the 40s or 50s, and she was really adamant about the fact that I should try to get a higher degree. And so I think you're crazy. I just finishing. I couldn't even get out of high school, and now you want me to go to graduate school or graduate school. And I said, this is way out of my league. And she said, it is not, you have to do this. You just have to think about that. So I was her research assistant, which was really helpful. And then I did graduate with my daughter and still with the first husband. and, And then I got divorced, got a job at Minnesota, and then I got divorced. I wasn't going to get divorced before I finished my degree. But in those journeys, I really learned a lot about things that are sort of necessary in the time and place and sustainable across my whole career. So it was really an important aspect, but you know, on the face of it, it looks like it's maybe not so good. but it pushed me more forward than I ever thought I could be. And I thought, you know, just getting an undergraduate degree was fabulous. But
amazing.
That's very inspiring.
Yeah. Thank you. And, you know, I haven't talked about this for, you know, a long time. I talked a few years ago to some groups and stuff, but it, you know, because it's still, I still feel uncomfortable thinking about it, but I think it's an important message to people.
To help shape your story.
Yeah. So, anyway, I finally finished my degree and I got a job in Minnesota, my first job, and I got divorced. And then I met Charles, my husband, who I adore. That was a really difficult time again because, you know, I had lots of stuff that comes along with divorce and child support and all that kind of jazz. But so that led me to be more intuitive about how people do things.
Right.
Because that was what I was training myself to do. Is if I can't read, then I can try to make up what was lost. And so I'd watch people's behaviors and doing all that kind of stuff and really pushing forward to try to get to a point where I felt more comfortable about what I was, who I was, what I was doing, what this all meant in the end.
And so maybe it's nice for students to know that communication and privacy management is the number one most cited theory in family communication studies. It is your article, from your special issue, is the number one most cited article in the Journal of Family Comm. Mm-hmm. And, like, what an amazing trajectory.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely, you've made such an influence on the field. And we were kind of wondering, at what point was privacy really become important to you and to start theorizing about privacy?
It's a hard question to answer in some ways, but I think one of the things that was useful, I was more interested in watching people and trying to think about why did they do that?
Yeah.
You know, I did my dissertation on married couples and communication issues, and I thought, you know, this is so interesting, because it was one of the examples that came out of that was a wife who didn't tell her husband that she'd been shopping and stowed away the clothing so the husband wouldn't see. It's like, What is the deal here? There's got to be something going on that I'm just discovering that's, you know, somebody's hiding something from a spouse, and it has to do with, two people owning the same, you know, bank account and all that kind of stuff. And so what do you do with all of this? And so I started to mess. I'm part of the disclosure. I mean, part of the dissertation that I did had, you know, all of these little pieces and good chunky things that you could talk to or talk about. So that would be...
Yeah, so you can trace it all the way back to your dissertation.
Yeah.
That's really
cool. Well, because in the disclosure literature was, for every finding, there was a counterfinding at that time. In the 70s, too, because it was really, you know, a little bit beyond... you know, let it all hang out, which was a motto, you know. And so that made me use the hypersensitivity I developed to just watch people and think about what is this? And it doesn't have anything to do with disclosure, because disclosure has to have, it has to have an umbrella, and it didn't really have a good umbrella. And so I think that work, just exploring things, and I always got excited when I saw, you know, connections that were, you know, just there in everyday life, but nobody was looking at it. Nobody paid any attention to what that is, and why it's important to know.
Very cool. So how did you go about the work of writing down those connections and making sense of all the pieces?
Oh, I take notes all over the place. I do. I have these little books that I've discovered that were great, and I bring them with me all the time. And I find things I see, you know, on the street and talking in the airport, in the restaurants, anywhere. There's all this. It's a theater, and you can see so much if you're looking.
Very nice. Thank you.
So a lot of theories evolve and grow over time. Mm-hmm. How maybe have you seen CPM grow, and where do you hope that it continues to flourish?
Yeah. Well, I hope that there will be enough people who are interested in this that will understand the need for observing everyday life. I think that's a key that has to be recognized, because some people just don't. I mean, they're oblivious to these things because they seem like so inconsequential. But that's just the problem. It's very consequential. People who've worked on this theory with me have been people who know that. You know, they get that. So it's kind of a unique subset. Because it isn't for everyone, but it is for the people who immediately see the utility of the theory. And that's because you're insightful, you're looking and paying attention to your environment, to your friends, to your people, and trying to describe what is that.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. So we're talking about decades of research here, right?
Yeah.
Do you feel like there's been a major shift, or is it just kind of a slow growth and expansion, applying it to different contexts, or how do you see the evolution?
The trajectory of it, yeah. That's a good question, because I think that it's the thrill of the hunt. what you're doing. The trajectory is built off of those things. You know, so once you see, like, I was talking with Jeff today, and said that if we hadn't done one of the articles that we published together, we would never know about recalibration, because it's not something people use or say or get something out of until you have a context. And so that was an important step. A very important step. Another important step that's very recent is because we have the website, we know that there are 44 countries represented in using CPM. Now that gives us cross-cultural options to see, because they all use use the same language and the same meanings of the language, which is remarkable. So it can actually be a true intercultural theory.
Wow.
But we have to dig in some to confirm that. But that's what it looks like, because people just don't willy-nilly take up a theory, especially in different countries.
Right.
You know, like Kenya and China and all of these places that don't have the same kind of culture have the same understanding of what privacy is.
Wow.
And that's pretty rich.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah.
So for the undergraduate students reading our textbook and listening mm-hmm. to your podcast, what are some things that, how can they use CPM to make sense of their lives?
Yeah, I think the thing that I hope is right is that the language is playing. You know, most of the time, all different levels of people get it. even children, when they're young, they get that there's some kind of rule. I don't call it a rule, but it's a, you know, and that they, when it has to do with these kinds of things that have to do with disclosure and privacy, there's a rudimentary understanding of that. And so I think those kinds of issues are very important to follow up with and try to pick out how it is we can actually train people to the language. But lots of people, I think, take it as a gift because they know something is there. But until you name it,
right,
it's not a thing that you can use. Those with the with undergraduates, you know, they tend to get it right away. I mean, you do or you don't, and it is sort of bifurcated that way. But even the people who don't get it in classes, eventually they get at least some rudimentary part of it.
Definitely. Very good. Can you tell us about any kind of current research projects that you're doing or that you know of other people doing using CPM that are exciting? And
oh, there's I check that website all the time because I think, oh, that was such a great idea. You know, and then I write to, this is fabulous. Do this.
Bet they cannot believe they just got that email. That's probably really exciting.
I do. I think sometimes they just, I don't know if they even believe that yet or not. But I think that the future of it is really in your hands. I mean, that's how I've thought about this. It's not really mine. It is everyone's because it's a gift. And I think, you know, as long as there's good people like you around, the gift will keep on giving.
Wow, that's very nice. Advice for people who want to make, I don't want to say like write theories, because I know we can't set out to write theories. We have to have it has to come together in a kind of natural way. But I guess advice for having, for being brave enough to put that kind of thing out there. Yeah. Or I don't know what I'm trying to
say. Oh, yeah, I'll tell you, the first manuscript I wrote, it was about the marital couples on the theory, although I had done a bunch of stuff earlier, but it was all, there wasn't coherence on anything. But yeah, I think that people do have to be brave about that. And my first publication on that was, I was scared in some ways because I thought, you know, well, what if this doesn't? So my friend Judith Martin, who was editor for we didn't have Con Theory then. I can't think of which journal it was, but anyway. So my friend was a good, was an advisee of the person who was the editor.
Okay.
And I said to her, I said, well, if I don't hear from him, then I'm going to not do, it was like, you know, a litmus test. I'm not going to write or try to figure out what's privacy is.
Wow.
And she said, you know, that's pretty tough to on yourself. I said, no, but no, I'm not going to do. And then I got the acceptance. And so wow. I thought, okay, well, you know, my future is sealed.
That's pretty wild. Yeah. I left it up to that one editor.
Yeah.
Luckily, he made the right decision.
Yeah, I was very lucky. But it was so, you know, I just, in the beginning, it was so, seemed perfect to me, but complicated for people. So that helped, though, shape, you know, creating the language, because that was really an very important move, to create the language of, you know, simple language. The only time I get miffed at that is that when I've done newspaper interviews and stuff like that, I say, you know, privacy turbulence, for example, is that's a concept, and they say, yeah, but it's language everybody knows. I say, yeah, but I want that quotes around. And they said, no, we can't do that. Yeah. Which is interesting.
Huh.
So I succeeded at making it plain. Yeah. Also, there's a downside to that.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to chat with us. We really appreciate it.
And you did a great job.
Thank you. And there you have it. Be sure to check out the corresponding chapter on this subject and see the discussion questions that go with this podcast in the textbook.